Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine, and we are broadcasting from a special location here today. We are at Children's Mercy Park, which is the site of three big matches coming up in the world of soccer starting tomorrow. We've got the Tournament of Nations taking place on the women's side of things. The Australian and Brazilian women's national teams will be duking it out here at 3:15 tomorrow. Then after 6 o'clock tomorrow night, the United States women's national team will be taking on Japan, which is a clash of titans in the women's world of soccer. And then, of course, on Saturday, Sporting Kansas City will be hosting first place FC Dallas on this very same field. So it's going to be a busy week. That's why we are out here today. We've been watching the women's teams train and have media availabilities all day long here at Children's Mercy Park. Carter, it's going to make for a pretty fun week. How are you, man?
Yeah, doing well, Nate. And you said it. It's a fun week, so I'm doing well. There's a lot of soccer. I mean, well, we had Swope Park Rangers here this past weekend, mm-hmm. So add that to the list of games in Kansas City over this past week. Been a lot of soccer here, and yeah, I'm really excited for the tournament tomorrow as well.
Scoreless draw in that Swope Park Rangers game. We'll hopefully see some more goals here tomorrow, and then, of course, on the weekend on Saturday. We've got a lot to get to on the show today. We are going to basically have a lot of information for you on what's coming up over the next 24 hours here at Children's Mercy Park. We're going to hear from United States Women's National Team head coach Jill Ellis, one of the all-time great women's national team players, Becky Sauerbrunn, who actually played professionally for a couple years here in Kansas City. And we're going to hear from Amy Rodriguez, who also played in Kansas City. In fact, scored a couple of goals in an NWSL championship win for FCKC when they were still in existence a couple years ago. We're going to hear from them about this upcoming matchup against Japan tomorrow night. Then we're going to talk to the executive director of the soon-to-be United States Soccer Hall of Fame, which is going in Frisco, Texas, the home of FC Dallas. They've been doing that multi-million dollar renovation of that stadium for quite some time. And they're going to be doing a big giveaway because the unveiling of that facility will actually be when Sporting Kansas City play at FC Dallas later this year. Of course, Sporting are playing at home against FC Dallas on Saturday. And there's a way for you to win an all-expenses-paid trip to see that game, which could be a massive game in the Western Conference late in the season at FC Dallas. And, of course, you could also be there for the unveiling of the United States Soccer Hall of Fame as well. So we'll have that information for you coming up in a little bit. But first things first, Carter, weekend off for Sporting KC this past weekend. The players had a chance to get away. One of them had a chance to get married. Some of them had a chance to go to that wedding if they didn't get out of town. But I think maybe a very much-needed reset button. In fact, I know Daniel Shalloway tweeted out a picture of the reset button after the Houston Dynamo debacle in the U.S. Open Cup. Maybe the weekend off came at just the right time for the Sporting Kansas City team.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I got a chance to talk with a couple of the guys and Peter Vermees today at training, and sounded like they thought much of the same. For Vermees, it was just, you know, with this unbalanced schedule, you never know when you're going to get some of these weekends off. And he was happy that it was in the middle of the season regardless, because he thought over the course of the season it was a good place for this little break to fall, so that, like you said, they could recharge and rest a little bit. And especially with the injuries they had over the past month and a half, maybe try and get some guys a little healthier than they have been. But Ilya and Johnny Russell were saying, yeah, it was a good time for, just based off the poor run of form there, they could reset and refocus, and I think it did come at a good time. And maybe the biggest thing will be getting some guys back good and healthy.
Yeah, certainly that is a big key for this team. We know that they've been ravaged by injuries here of late. Of course, the run of play would tell you that they needed something to change. Five matches without a victory for Sporting KC in all competitions, and four of those five were losses. Now, we could also talk about the fact that four of those five games were away from home. That certainly doesn't help matters. And obviously the one result at home was a draw against Toronto FC. And we've seen Sporting KC play without their center back pairing in Matt Beasler and Ike Opara. Felipe Gutierrez is working his way back into the mix, but other guys like Roger Espinoza and Daniel Shalloui maybe had to serve a suspension at one point during that game or during that stretch as well. So certainly that's part of it, like you said, getting healthy. But we also heard some very harsh words from Peter Vermees after the loss at the Houston Dynamo in what I thought was actually a fairly competitive game until all of a sudden the wheels just came off at the end. Once Houston Dynamo took the lead, then it seemed like it got away from Sporting Kansas City. Peter Vermees questioned the character of at least a couple of the players. Didn't name names, but said some players he thought gave up in the game. Certainly not anything you ever want to hear Peter Vermees say about you if you're trying to stay on his team. I have to imagine that made for some nervy moments for the players in the moments afterwards.
Yeah, I would think so, because like you said, when he says something like that to the media, it's very intentional. And so I think we'll still see some of that fallout from that Houston game, because like you said, the quotes post-game are so indicative of how he was feeling and just unhappy with, like you said, the way they just kind of gave up there once Houston took the lead in the second half. And especially with how they started in that game, you would have thought that they could have gone on and got something scoring in the second minute. But after that, it was mostly Houston Dynamo. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the way Peter Vermees came out after the game is just clearly indicative of things are not – he's not happy with how those things were going. And so I expect to see some big changes coming into this weekend.
Yeah, you'd be stunned if we don't, because Peter Vermees, first of all, I think that if a coach goes there, if he goes to where he went with the post-game comments and saying that some players are going to find themselves very, 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 very far, it was five varies. far from the team, I think any coach, if you say that stuff publicly, there has to be action that follows it up. You can't say something like that and then backtrack, because I think that your words then lose teeth within the locker room. We know one thing about Peter Vermees: his words have teeth. They don't. He doesn't meaninglessly. He doesn't make idle threats, so to speak. And so, not only I think would any coach have to follow through, I think we know Peter Vermees will do just that. So it will be interesting to see what the lineup is.
Yeah.
And who's in the 18, even. Yeah. I think because look, some guys are going to be back in the lineup. Some guys are going to be out just because players are back from injury, like we talked about. But maybe could we even see some players that aren't in the 18? That's something I'm going to be curious to see on Saturday.
I think that'll be a big sign of maybe who he was talking about or who is on in the doghouse, the Peter Vermees doghouse, which we've seen has had some players over the years occupy a spot. And so I think, in the 18, you might have some prizes coming off of that game. And, yeah, like you said, you're not going to win a game where you have certain players that just give up or don't put in the effort like they have to. That's the result you get. So I think they were well aware that it was Houston's deserved result just based on what happened in the game. And I thought there's some quotes from Vermees as well that he thought before the game they had put out aside and tactics that were good enough to go down there and advance. And so I think he was just disappointed with the way that some players wound up playing down in Houston.
Well, the good news is that there is still plenty of time in this season for this team to recover, and really all of their goals are still there to be accomplished, with the exception, of course, of defending the U.S. Open Cup title. But I also think that Sporting had kind of made it clear, yes, they were trying to win that game, but that isn't as big of a priority as some of the other goals that they've had set this year. Obviously, first and foremost, is just getting that home playoff game that has been so elusive for them since 2013. And those things are still there. I mean, you look at this game coming up on Saturday. This is a massive match against an FC Dallas team that are 6 points ahead of Sporting Kansas City. They're in first place. That also means, though, that a victory on your home field against your division rival would put you right back within 3 points of that team. And that's not that big of a gap. There is room to make serious movement over the final 14 games of this season, positively or negatively. So you're hoping that this week off is an opportunity to get things headed back in the right direction.
Yeah, Ilya Sanchez said that today at practice. He thinks FC Dallas is the perfect opponent to come out of this break against, despite them, and he called them, I think, the best team in the West to this point in the season. But he said, you know, we're right there, and this is the perfect opponent to come out of this break to really refocus our efforts here and to get a really stern test on the weekend. And it's the first in a line of some really, really important Western Conference games, especially when you talk about trying to host a home playoff game in the Western Conference. They're coming out of this break, and it's a heck of a schedule in August and late July that they have to go through. So to have it at home, I think, is a big factor as well. But I think to get this test out of the break, it's a good one for Sporting KC because they've had a week and a half to really focus on FC Dallas.
Okay, you mentioned that run. Obviously, the focus is on the game on Saturday against FC Dallas. And by the way, we'll point out, in case you haven't heard the news already, there has been a small change in the schedule. The game was originally scheduled to kick off at 7:30 on Saturday and for the game to be televised locally on Fox Sports Kansas City. The game was picked up on national television because of the heat in Portland, actually, that the ESPN was scheduled to televise the game in Portland this weekend, but because of the heat there, they moved that game back, which made ESPN have to scramble to find a game. They chose, I think very wisely, a great matchup, although it takes the TV broadcast away from the two of us and Matt Lawrence. This is a great matchup. So the game is moving back to 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock on Saturday night here at Children's Mercy Park. With the broadcast being on ESPN, of course, you can listen to the game right here. We will have a radio-specific call for you on Sports Radio 810 WHB with the full crew, myself, Matt Lawrence, and Carter Augustine on the sideline. So you'll want to make sure that you tune in for that one on Saturday night. So that's an 8 o'clock game. Now, you mentioned the other games. Well, we just mentioned it. First place FC Dallas. After that, at the Houston Dynamo, who are pushing their way back in. We know how dangerous of a team they are. We saw what Sporting Kansas City went through playing down there, and we also know what the conditions are like in Houston
in August.
In August. Oh, it's going to be swimming out there. Then it's at LAFC, maybe the most dynamic team. Yes, they're coming off a blowout loss on the road at Minnesota United, but we've seen how impressive and how good that LAFC team has been so far this year. They're a contender.
High scorers in the West.
Yep.
42 goals through 20 games.
And then the Portland Timbers, who are quietly kind of sneaking their way back up. They still got a couple of games in hand. They've been in great form of late as well. So that is a massively difficult four-game stretch coming up for Sporting Kansas City.
Those are the three top teams in the West in terms of points per game, with Dallas, L.A., and Portland, and then the away trip to Houston in August in there as well. It's going to be a really difficult stretch, and it'll go a long way, I think, to showing how good this team can be. And if they can catapult themselves back up into those upper echelons of the West by the end of the season so that they can get that home playoff game, which we know if this team gets a home playoff game, they're going to be really tough to oust in the playoffs. So I'm really curious to see what happens over these next four games, because I think it'll go a long way into telling us what this Sporting KC season can turn into.
What do you need to shoot for in terms of points total out of those four games?
Well, you got two at home and two on the road, so I think 7 points probably is a good tally. It's two wins and a draw, and I think it's certainly doable. And I don't know about what do you think?
I think that the goal should be 8 points, two wins and two draws. Now that's that you might call that pie in the sky or whatever. If you can find a way to pull off three wins and even take a loss, then you're at 9 points. I think that's just absolute gravy. You're thrilled there. 7 points is acceptable, I think is the way you kind of look at it. If I'm prioritizing things, if I'm the team, I think it's reasonable to shoot for 8 points. You got to say we got to win our home games. If you want to get back to where you want to be as a team, you have to win your home games and come away with results in these two road games, or pull something off. I do think that one of the things Sporting has to do because of the stretch that they've been on is, I think they got to find another way to steal one back on the road.
Yeah.
They drop points at home in that Toronto FC game. They dropped the chance to grab some sort of result in New York against Red Bulls. I think they need to grab something back that they aren't supposed to get now. And can you do it at Houston or at LAFC? It's going to be tough. I know it's going to be very tough. But if you're trying to have a special season, I think those are the types of things that that you try to shoot for. We'll see what happens. Now, this FC Dallas team, we'll talk more about them in a little bit. But they've been in the headlines here of late. Kellen Acosta traded to the Colorado Rapids for Dominic Badji. Mauro Diaz is out as well, yet they still are a very good team. I just want to get your thoughts on the Kellen Acosta deal, a man who at this time a year ago was considered like the great young hope of the United States men's national team, at least domestically, from the United States pool of things.
Yeah, it's a bummer. He hasn't had a great season, has he, Kellen Acosta? And it seems like his star is fading a little bit, which, you know, he's still so young. I think he's got time. Hopefully this change of scenery reinvigorates him from a U.S. men's national team's fan perspective, because this is a kid as a 15-year-old was playing up with the 17s and has had just a bright future and has long been tallied for great successes. And I don't know, something has gone wrong along the way, and I'm really curious to see if he can kick on. Badji is a decent player in a bad situation as well, and he's got some pace about him, so maybe that's what Oscar Pareja was looking for. It's a curious trade because Kellen Acosta is such a huge prospect, so to see him go from FC Dallas, where he is a homegrown, he's from Plano, it's interesting to me, and hopefully it can kickstart Kellen Acosta's career, because, yeah, it's stalled a little bit, hasn't it?
I think some questions should start being asked about what was so long touted as the great academy program in MLS, being FC Dallas. They signed so many players to senior club deals. None of those guys play. And Kellen Acosta was the one who was playing, and now he's gone from being a guy that many people thought was just destined for a multi-million dollar transfer to a big European club, now traded to one of the worst teams in MLS, a team that seems pretty directionless, for a guy who's a good striker, like you said, but was a third-round pick in MLS. It is amazing how far of a drop that is. And I do think that for Oscar Pareja, you know, and I think you heard some grumbling sometimes from people that, yeah, okay, they sign a lot of guys. Do they play? Do they develop? They don't have that USL squad where players can transition and play. And look, Kellen Acosta was playing for them. I'm not suggesting that he's a victim of them not having that B squad, but
he is really the only one. Him and Ulloa really are the only ones that have gotten actual game time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's interesting. But maybe it's just, they signed a new number 10 as well, just recently, Aranguiz from Chile. So that's a young kid who they expect to be the new number 10, like Mauro Diaz, and maybe that shifts the midfield a little bit, and that made the coach think, hey, we need another forward. We have enough in midfield. But, yeah, like you said, just surprising considering the stock that Kellen Acosta did have just a year or two ago.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you about how you can win a trip to see Sporting Kansas City, go back down to Frisco, Texas, and take on FC Dallas later this summer. That's coming up. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues live from Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas, which will tomorrow play host to the first round of the Tournament of Nations, with the United States, Brazil, Japan, and Australia all featured in that three-game tournament, three games for each team. There will be a doubleheader tomorrow with Australia taking on Brazil at 3:15, then the United States women's national team against Japan at 6 o'clock. You can get tickets at ussoccer.com. We've been telling you the Sporting KC will be taking on FC Dallas on Saturday as well at 8 o'clock. And then, second-to-last game of the regular season, October 21st, Sporting KC will be playing at FC Dallas. And, boy, that could be a massive game. As you look at the standings right now, these very well could and most likely will be two of the teams battling for top spots in the Western Conference standings at the end of the year. It's also going to be the day that the National Soccer Hall of Fame is unveiled. And joining us on the line to talk about that is the executive director of the National Soccer Hall of Fame, which will be opening in Frisco, Texas, Jorn Buchholz. Jorn, thanks for joining us. Good evening. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, we want to talk to you about a special event. You guys, first of all, can you just tell us about the Hall of Fame game between Sporting Kansas City and FC Dallas on October 21st? You guys have been gearing up for this for quite some time. What can we expect?
We have. It's going to be an amazing weekend. It's actually going to be our induction weekend for the entire weekend. So the night before, we'll have the 2018 class going into the Hall of Fame as our induction ceremony in the actual Hall of Fame itself, and then a full stadium Imagine Dragons concert after that, followed by in that Hall of Fame game on Sunday with Sporting Kansas City and FC Dallas. It's going to be really an amazing weekend.
And the reason we're having you on is because you guys are having a competition in which people can win and this is for Sporting Kansas City fans to head down and watch this match and go to the concert, round trip airfare to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, two tickets to the induction ceremony and the Imagine Dragons concert, and two tickets to the FC Dallas SKC match on October 21st as well. Tell me how people can get involved in this and how can they win.
Yeah, we're excited. We're actually going to be on site at Children's Mercy Park tomorrow for the USA game and Fan HQ, getting people registered, as well as at the Sporting game. We're going to be down in the brew house at the match. But people can actually go online and do it right now at visitfrisco.com and then /HOF. And, you know, we're doing this partnership in conjunction with our great friends, really, at the Visitor Convention Bureau of Frisco. Our friends at Visit Frisco are going to be on site with us really over those two games, because we think it's a fantastic opportunity for Sporting KC fans to come down, watch their team play, and take in what is going to be really an epic weekend when we reopen the Hall of Fame in Frisco.
So every time I watch an FC Dallas game, whether it's on television or when we're down there, you can see the construction that's going on, and you can see the seats that are on that side of the stadium and the construct behind it. Can you just tell us maybe a little bit about what people can expect once this thing is finally opened up, and what's that going to do for the stadium as a whole?
Well, I think it's a huge improvement for the stadium, and it's a $56 million improvement to the south end of the stadium, which we're really excited about. But, you know, really what I've been telling people, sure, this Hall of Fame, I think, is going to be unlike anything people have ever experienced before. Sure, we're going to have over 400 artifacts to tell the history of our game, but we're going to have a digital, personalized experience unlike anything that's ever been done before. Virtual reality, gesture technology, get inside the head of a Tim Howard and see if you could make the same saves that he did. It's going to be incredible, and we're going to call ourselves the most personalized experience in sports, because that's what we're gearing up for, and it's truly going to be an incredible place to come visit.
And let's say people are planning a trip down there to go to a game and to go to the Hall of Fame. What's it like? I mean, do you pay an entry fee? Do you have to set it up ahead of time? How is it going to be for visitors to check out the facility?
Yep. So we'll have all of that information on our website for the Hall of Fame, which is nationalsoccerhof.com. Ticketing information will be starting, but right now, you know, what really Sporting Kansas City fans can do, and really any fans, is there's a $79 ticket option that gets them the concert on Saturday evening, as well as the Sporting Kansas City game on Sunday. And, you know, we'll be letting people come through the Hall of Fame. You know, anybody that buys really those Hall of Fame season tickets or game day tickets down in that south section will have the opportunity to come through the Hall of Fame pregame and then go straight out to their seats. So that's available right now. Not a lot of them left, because that concert is basically sold out. But we've opened up a few more tickets, especially as we're coming to Kansas City this weekend, because we want to encourage a lot of people from Kansas City to come on down.
Okay, George, so one more time, give us the website where people can go to buy those tickets, and then tell people also how they can register to win the trip that includes the airfare, the tickets to the induction ceremony, the concert, and the game as well. How can people buy tickets, and how can people register to win?
Yep, so if people want to take advantage of that $79 ticket package for the Imagine Dragon concert and the game the next day, they would visit www.nationalsoccerhof.com, and it's in Hall of Fame. And if you want to try to get your name in the hat to win that all-expenses-paid trip, you're going to go to www.visitfrisco.com/HOF, as in Hall of Fame. And I think there's two great opportunities. We hope people will enter and win, but we really also hope people that maybe don't win come on down and see us for induction weekend in October of 2018.
Well, it's going to be a massive game as well, which is going to be a lot of fun. So, and Jordan, you're going to be up here tomorrow, is that right?
I am on a flight first thing in the morning, and I will be there in Fan HQ tomorrow afternoon, really starting around 2 p.m. all the way up until the women kick off. So we'll have a tent set up. I encourage people to come on down. We'll have registration forms for people to win that trip right there, and then we'll be back on site Saturday, really pregame down in the Budweiser Brew House, getting everybody ready for that big game Saturday evening. So everybody that's listening right now, we encourage you to come on by, ask us questions. That's what we're there for, but we're really excited about the opening of the Hall of Fame, and hope we can get people to come on down from Kansas City, support their team, and really kind of witness history as we reopen the Hall of Fame that hasn't had a home for 8 years. So we're really excited.
Well, we know the Hunt family is inextricably linked to both the Dallas area and Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City wouldn't be here without the Hunt family as well. So there's a heck of a connection and a bond there as well, Jordan. So we appreciate the time. Safe travels up here. We'll see you tomorrow.
You got it. Thank you, Nate.
All right. That is Jordan Buchholz, who is basically letting you know how you can win those tickets. The executive director of the National Soccer Hall of Fame, which is going to be unveiled in Frisco, Texas. And Carter, I think kind of a cool deal that it's going to be these two teams. You know, Sporting Kansas City, FC Dallas, two teams with a rich history. And we mentioned, you know, the Hunt family are so instrumental to the history of American soccer. It's appropriate, I think, that these two teams would be involved in the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a really nice touch that it is those two teams with that Hunt connection. And then it'll be a nice touch if that game means something for the Western Conference as well, too, the top teams in the conference this season. So hopefully both of them keep kicking on, and that game has a whole lot of meaning to it, and we'll see a little bit of that this weekend as well.
Yeah, we saw FC Dallas really kind of collapse down the stretch last year. I don't see that same thing happening this year, although you never know. In MLS, things can turn quickly in this league. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to give you a little preview of this Tournament of Nations tomorrow. We're going to hear from U.S. National Team Coach Jill Ellis. We're going to hear from Becky Sauerbrunn and Amy Rodriguez as well as we get ready for what a wonderful matchup it is, the United States against Japan tomorrow night here at Children's Mercy Park. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show. It is summertime in Kansas City, and a big competition taking place tomorrow at Children's Mercy Park right here, where Carter and Augustine and I are right now, is the Tournament of Nations. In fact, Carter, you can see the signage up around Children's Mercy Park right now. And it's, I don't know, to me it's a little exciting when there's an event like this coming to town. The different teams have been, you know, alternating their training sessions out here on the field today. And meanwhile, you can kind of see the transformation of the stadium go up. You know, the putting up the signage, the different the flags for Japan, Brazil, Australia, the United States, and different signs. The gift shop on the far side all of a sudden has USA Soccer logos all over it instead of Sporting KC logos. It's kind of fun to be here the day before a big day like tomorrow.
Yeah, it's got like a big time feel, even though it is a friendly, but it's a big one. It feels, you know, like this. It's the last tune-up for this U.S. women's national team before they have to qualify for France next summer. So they've got such a strong squad here training, and obviously for the game tomorrow. But, yeah, it is cool to be in here. It seems like a buzz. And when you have the international flavor, I think that adds to it as well, because, like you said, the teams have been shuffling in and out, ran past the Brazil team when they got here. And it's a different type of buzz, and it's really cool.
And the weather is supposed to be just perfect tomorrow. 80 degrees for the high.
Oh, wow.
In Kansas City.
Don't jinx us.
In late July. Yeah. Are you kidding me? And it really hasn't been that bad today. And the high was 91, but it's been kind of a dry weather so far. And maybe a little bit of rain coming in tonight. But right now they're calling for a high of 80 degrees and a low of 70 tomorrow here in Kansas City, which you couldn't ask for anything better than that. You called it a friendly. Now, this is one of those ones that's there needs to be some sort of an acronym between like a friendly and a real competition.
Sure.
Because this is there will be a trophy handed out at the end of this.
Yeah, I'll probably get admonished for calling it a friendly.
It's the Tournament of Nations. But it's interesting because this is the second iteration of the competition. Jill Ellis was the one that came up with this idea, and the main reason was because – look, these are four of the top 10 teams almost every year when it comes to the FIFA women's rankings. pretty much the rest of the top 10 is made up of teams from Europe. And those teams get to play one another when they're going through qualification and all their other competitions. The United States and the teams from Asia don't get to see as much of that type of competition. And so she wanted to put together something that brings some of the top teams in the world together so that they can get that type of competition and they're not stunned by it when they get to the World Cup, assuming, of course, the United States gets to the World Cup, which we know we cannot assume at this point in time.
Yep.
And so they did it last year. They're doing it again this year. Now, the format of the competition is all four teams will play against one another. At the end of the competition, so it's, that's obviously three games for each team. At the end of the competition, the team with the most points would be the winner. Then, of course, there's the tiebreakers of goal differential, goals scored, etc. At the end of it, if they're tied on all of those things, the team with the highest ranking takes the trophy. That's the United States. They're the number one ranked team. So
it's kind of like boxing in that sense, huh?
Yeah. So to the victor go the spoils, yeah. I guess. And really, like, it's on home soil for the United States.
Yeah. Decision goes the way of the favorite here.
Yeah. The defending champ.
Yeah.
This is where there's that wiggle room between: is this a friendly? Are these? Is this a real competition? Some of the rules are tweaked a little bit. There will be no shootouts. There will be no extra time. If it's level at the end of a match, each team's going to take 1 point, and they're going to move on with things. Six substitutions for each team going into this.
I think that's the biggest one for me. That's what kind of is a big demarcation for me.
Right. Right, because in an official competition, it's three substitutions. So that is going to be one big difference in this one. Last year, it was Australia that won the thing. They got their first ever win against the United States women's national team here a year ago in the first round of it. Tomorrow, it's going to be Australia taking on Brazil in the first round, and then the United States taking on Japan. Let's hear from Jill Ellis, the head coach for the United States women's national team. And look, there's some tremendous history between these two teams, the United States and Japan. But when it comes to what are these teams trying to accomplish going into this competition as opposed to a year ago? Well, the United States, they're going to get ready for CONCACAF qualifying here. They've got to go through their qualifying process to try to get in to next summer's World Cup in October. So it's a little bit of a tune-up for that. Jill Ellis says the objectives are a little different for this Tournament of Nations compared to a year ago.
Yeah, this is a great tournament for us. She believes a great tournament for us. I mean, we're just trying to grow and get better. And the way you do that is testing yourselves in certain situations. So I think it's getting better at what we do. Like I said, we know the shape we want to be. We know the type of team we want to be. We know roles and responsibilities. The next step for us as we bring players back and they're healthy is now building the cohesion piece. You know, I think we've got the skeleton. Now it's the connective tissue and the framework of the nerves that we will start to focus on. And I think, you know, realistically, you can't do that until you have all the pieces available. But I think we're almost there. You know, we've obviously, Mal's not in and Kelly's not in, but it's been great having Shorty back in and Tobin and Sonnet and these guys. So it's pretty exciting. But this is just another wonderful opportunity for our players. You know, we do have qualifying around the corner. Three very different styles, going to see different, situations. But I think most importantly, it's that competitive piece, that, you know, getting on a platform, winning a tournament, building confidence in who we are and what we're about.
I thought the part of that quote that stood out to me the most was last year was about building the skeleton. Now it's about the connective tissue. They didn't look great in this Tournament of Nations a year ago, but Jill Ellis was starting to ramp up to the next World Cup cycle, tinkering with some things, formations, players. She feels like she has most of that set the way she wants it now if the team's healthy. So now it's about the connective tissue and getting the team ready to play the way they want to play.
Yeah, I like that analogy, and maybe getting the muscles back used to working with each other and seeing those connections really form on the field. And we know that's so important in soccer. And you have your 11 players out in the field, but, you know, different players interact more often with other players than they do with other players on different areas of the pitch. So it is really important. I think it is a really important one in terms of, like you said, just gearing up. France is only a year away.
Now, I mentioned the history between the United States and Japan in women's soccer. They've had some massive matchups over the years. Now, the United States has by far the larger success in the history of this this rivalry. But we can all look back to 2011 when Japan beat the United States to win the World Cup on penalties, and it kind of dethroned the big giants at that time. Now, little did we know at that time that would be the start of a run of three straight world competitions in which these two teams would face off in the finals.
Yeah.
2011, then in the Olympics in 2012, and then, of course, in that unforgettable final in Canada in 2015, the United States winning that one basically in runaway fashion. But for Jill Ellis, she goes back to 2011. And says that win by Japan was not just a watershed moment for Japan, but for the world of women's soccer.
I think Japan winning in 2011 was a little bit of a tipping point in our sport. You know, it suddenly did say that having the ball is maybe, you know, it was always the big, strong, fast. And then you have Japan come along and they had the ball and they were exceptional. And I think it's, you know, it added to our sport in terms of, you know, making everybody go, huh, okay, it is important to obviously have the technical side of the game. They are just, you know, I think they're just an incredibly professional team. I think, you know, they are uber competitive, but they are, you know, just, you know, they're just a great group. I mean, they're, you know, their head coach, they're just really nice, you know, and I think you can, you know, they're on the pitch, it's fierce in terms of, but there's such a tremendous respect for their program. You know, they train with such diligence and intensity, and you know, technically from top to bottom, they're solid. So I think there's just so many, you know, great qualities about this team, and I think they're, you know, they were a team that needed to come on the world stage, so that there was different types of teams, you know, competing for championships.
So I thought that was interesting, changing the way that we view the women's game, that it, up until that point, it was all about athleticism. When we talk about the different components of soccer, Peter Vermees oftentimes refers to the physical, the mental, the technical, and the tactical. Basically, according to Jill Ellis, it was all about the physical in the women's game, who had the better athletes, and that was the United States up until that point. Japan came out and said, no, the technical and the tactical parts matter as well, and you can win a World Cup in the women's game doing that. So it was interesting to talk to Becky Sauerbrunn, who's been a part of the women's national team since 2008. She's seen all of those competitions in that iteration, and she agreed with Jill Ellis when it came to that assessment of what that 2011 team for Japan meant.
Oh, I 100% think that when Japan beat us in that final in 2011, that it was a shock because they had kind of gone under the radar the entire tournament. And then they beat us, and, I mean, they play fantastic soccer. And so I think at that point, we had known that there were countries that were kind of like rising through the ranks and they were really starting to put good performances together. And I think that point for us in the women's program, it was we can no longer rely on just our mentality, because I think that's something that sets us apart still, is that we have a very good mentality. We can will ourselves to win, but we can't rely on that anymore. We actually have to have the technical ability as well. And so that's something that Jill, when she became the coach, really started harping on us. Pia Sundaga, also Tom Sermani, all the coaches that I've had have really stressed that you have this already in your ID, in your identity, so why don't we just add more layers to it.
Is it a challenge to keep the mental part that you talked about, that mental edge, while incorporating another, you know, the technical and tactical part?
It is, because in order to kind of get away from sometimes how we play, you need to learn new things and you have to be brave enough to try new things. And we've done that, and you've seen it with Jill. You know, we've experimented with formations and new personnel, and sometimes you get the results and sometimes you don't. And this is a team that hates losing, and we've lost, you know, a fair amount for us in the last few years. And so it's been tough, and it's hard for us to lose, but we still hate it. Still absolutely hate losing, but it's been good for us because I think we have grown and we have made strides in the technical areas, and we've still held on to that mentality that we can always rely on that if we need to.
One of those losses, the first ever loss against Australia last year in this competition, mm-hmm. did you guys grow from that? I mean, what do you remember about maybe the experience of going through this tournament in Nations last year?
Yeah, I mean, we struggled, I think, in that game, because, I mean, we obviously lost, but then the Brazil game right after that, you know, we were down two goals in the second half and had to score three in the last few minutes to win. And so for us, that was kind of like all right, we still have a lot to learn. It was good to be competing against some of the best teams out of Asia and out of South America. So, yeah, I mean, those are teaching moments, and you have to remember how those, you know, leaving the field, losing, how that feels, and make sure you don't feel like that ever again.
So this time around, you're very close to your qualifying campaign, and then obviously hopefully the World Cup. So How different is it going into this tournament of nations with such important things right on the horizon?
Yeah, I think you try to keep perspective and know that there are more important things coming down the line. You know, qualifications is huge and very important to us. But you also need to use these games because they're special games. Like, it's very rare to be playing the best in the world and to learn and kind of find your strengths and weaknesses. But we do know that performances is probably just as important as the results for this tournament because we have to be playing well in qualifiers.
So performance is important as results. But I thought what stood out to me, Carter, there, when she used the word brave, you have to be brave enough to possibly lose some games as you try to grow as a team. I get a real sense from talking to people here that 2017 was about that, was about tinkering, trying to push themselves out of their comfort zone. We're going to be okay if some results don't go our way because we're going to try to do some different things. But now it's 2018. Now it's time to get ready for the World Cup and make sure you get into the World Cup. I get the sense we might see a little different mentality from this U.S. team in this Tournament of Nations than we did last year.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that. And I love hearing from Becky Sauerbrunn. She's so well-experienced and so well-spoken, and I agree. And I think the thing that stood out was performance has to be there as well as the result this year. They're expecting to start firing on all cylinders as they head into this qualification. So I like that. And then just both of them touching on Japan and their influence on the women's game. I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel like there are countries around the world that are starting to, you know, catch up a little bit more, and more starting to pop up. And so I had never really thought about it in terms of that side of it. So that was really interesting to me that, yeah, the U.S. women for so long have just been so dominant physically and athletically. And so for them to give credit to Japan for, you know, incorporating a little bit more of the technical side, that was really interesting to me.
Well, and the professional leagues on the women's side around the world are starting to develop, and I think that makes a huge difference. You look at, you know, I'm going to be calling these two games for the World Feed tomorrow. So doing my preparation, you start looking into where these guys play, where these women play. For Japan, every single player except for one is playing professionally in Japan. Mm-hmm. That one player that's not is playing here in the United States. Every player on the United States national team is playing domestically in the United States except for one. And that one is playing in Europe. A couple have gone over to Europe briefly and then come back to the United States. You look at a team like Brazil, all over the world, some playing professionally in South America, some playing in Europe, some playing here in the United States. You look at Australia, kind of the same deal there. But all of a sudden, when you start to see some of these big clubs in the world, like a Juventus, start to incorporate a women's team, they're not just going to get in it and mess around, an organization like that. And so it is. And Mexico all of a sudden has a professional league that, from what I understand, is starting to get players.
Yeah.
And not just get players, but get fans, 10,000, 15,000 fans coming to their games. Their team, by results, is way behind. The rest of CONCACAF has been way behind. But are they going to start to creep up a little bit and make things a little more difficult as well? It's going to be really interesting to see. Talking to the head coach of Brazil, Vadao, the exact opposite of the United States. He said that they feel very good about the technical aspect of things. It's the physical aspect of things where they have to catch up. So it's interesting to hear these different coaches from the different areas. The team to look out for, to me, is that Australian team. They won it last year. They've peaked out at the world competitions in the quarterfinals every time. But they've got a really experienced team, and almost everybody in that group is still in their 20s,
yeah,
but well over 50 caps. They feel like this is their time to kind of go against the big boys.
They'll have some expectations on them too, yeah, won't they? In this tournament as well, having won the last one. But I think you're right. It sounds like, and this is cool about the women's game, is there's more and more talk about it. And so you've been hearing from Australia that, you know, this time next year they need to be making a run. They have some expectations, so we'll see how they live up to that as well.
I kind of compare them to that Belgium team, yeah, on the men's side a little bit. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll wrap things up. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, this is just a quick segment to wrap things up. Our thanks to Jorn Buholtz for joining us from Frisco, Texas, where you can win a chance to go down to watch Sporting Kansas City and FC Dallas play. And our thanks to Becky Sauerbrunn and Jill Ellis for joining us as well from here, where the Tournament of Nations will be taking place tomorrow, 3:15 for Australia versus Brazil, 6 o'clock for the United States versus Japan, tickets at ussoccer.com, and then on Saturday, Sporting KC against first place FC Dallas at 8 o'clock. Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Carter, should be a lot of fun.
It's a big one. It's a big one. We talked about it. It's a big one. Coming out of that break, they should be refocused and re-energized, and hopefully some of those guys are back healthy as well, the center backs and maybe Felipe Gutierrez. We saw him play in New York, so hopefully he's feeling good as well.
Yeah, they need a healthy Felipe Gutierrez down the stretch this season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Charlie back in the studio as well. We'll see you Saturday night. Broadcast will start at 7:30 right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB.